The boat attacks as extrajudicial killings has introduced resolutions that would require Trump to obtain authorization from Congress before attacking. But Trump insists he doesn't need authorization from Congress, even if he decides to invade. Quote, I'm not going to necessarily ask for a declaration of war, he said. I think we're just going to kill people that are bringing drugs into our country. Okay? We're going to kill them. You know, they're going to be like dead, unquote. Spoken like a true mafia leader. Maybe he'll notify Congress after the fact, but what if Congress isn't in session? Efforts to bring the War Powers Act into force are underway, but with virtually no chance of making it through Congress and onto Trump's desk. The War Powers Act compels consultation with Congress and a 60-day limit on military action without congressional consent to remove the limitation. When was the last time Trump sought congressional assent on any foreign policy? In his view of presidential power, Congress is largely a bystander. The president can do anything he wants. And therein lies the greatest danger from these extrajudicial killings, that they might extend to Trump's war within. Gunboat diplomacy transfers to the home front, where military forces in our cities shoot first and ask questions later. I'm Mel Gertoff of the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 28, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, Mel Gertov, and Dave Johnson. Our producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegadoff, Judith Ruiz Branch, Isabel Charlet, and Edwin J. Vieira. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Last week, Multnomah County Public Health Director Kirsten Aird signed on to a letter from the Big Cities Health Coalition, urging people to get vaccinated amid changing and sometimes confusing federal recommendations. I spoke with Director Aird to learn more. Okay, let's start here. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. I am Kirsten Aird, and I am the Multnomah County Public Health Director.
So you signed on to a letter with 23 other local public health officials as a part of the Big Cities Health Coalition. This letter concerns vaccines. Tell me about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Big Cities Health Coalition is a group of the nation's largest health departments, the leadership of the nation's largest health departments. And our goal is to, with this particular letter, is to really demonstrate our strong commitment to providing our communities with the opportunities that they need to support improved health, basically very much focused on getting vaccinated. We know vaccines have eradicated devastating diseases and have saved millions of lives. And so really focusing in on the importance of that, despite the extraordinary successes that they've had, this administration has really put a lot of confusing information out there. And so the leadership of these health departments really wanted to make clear the importance of vaccines and provide information so that families can make decisions about their health with a trusted healthcare provider.
Like you mentioned, the Big Cities Health Coalition includes health officials that serve roughly 1 in 5 Americans. Why is this something that you wanted to join?
Yeah, Multnomah County has been a member of this organization for a while. I think when we think about other national organizations that support local public health departments, what is unique about Multnomah County and our needs is the size. It's 800,000 people are in this county, and that is very large. And so working with other large county and city health departments allows us to learn from each other, see what's working in other parts of the country, and share what we're learning and where we're leading as well, and the interest of folks to want to better understand what's happening out here. So I think it's just an opportunity to be with colleagues who are all facing similar health concerns that arise in big cities.
Is this coalition related to the West Coast Health Alliance that Oregon, Washington, California, and Hawaii are a part of?
It is not. This coalition has been around much longer than that. The West Coast Health Alliance is across governments. So when we think of our governors and the state health departments, certainly we are big supporters of what is happening in these regions. There's one on the West Coast. There's one in New England area. So that governmental support of the local and state governmental infrastructures is really, really critical. So we are certainly a supporter, but they are not the same thing.
You mentioned this a little bit, right? But federal guidance from the Health and Human Services Department and the CDC has changed a lot since Trump took office. Let's get specific about that. Like, what has changed and how has that impacted your work?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're very, very troubled by the repeated false claims about vaccines from too many federal officials. Not all of them, but from too many of them. And that's really contributed to this decline that we're seeing in vaccinations, even though we know that they work. Again, extraordinary success in keeping folks healthy. We are equally concerned about the recent changes that have come regarding the recommendations of childhood and adult immunization schedules, which really makes it hard to access vaccines. It unnecessarily limits the ease to getting them. We believe very strongly that it is important for federal health leaders to follow the lead of pediatricians and medical researchers and support vaccinations to protect our kids, families, and communities.
Have you seen impacts on vaccination rates or other overall health issues that you're tracking here in Multnomah County?
Well, we certainly, as a state, our state alert system is able to report annually where our vaccination rates are for school regarding school exclusion. And we can look and see where our vaccination rates are among adults for flu and pneumonia and COVID. And certainly, we would like to see those numbers get higher. We would like to certainly be above the 90% range, which is where it loosely Multnomah County is for schools, K-12 youth. And we would like to see more adults vaccinated for flu and COVID, pneumonia, a number of respiratory issues, particularly as we're getting into respiratory season. That said, I think what's really telling is where we're seeing outbreaks on these preventable diseases across the country. And most recently, you may have heard that Marion County has found measles virus in the wastewater. So while no cases have come up, it does indicate that measles is around, and it is a highly contagious disease. Again, one that's preventable through vaccinations.
What role does trust play in all of this?
I mean, what we know is that families really do have individual trusted healthcare providers. Pediatricians are highly valued and trusted, and we want families to work with those individuals to make decisions that are right for their family and their family and child circumstances.
Why now? Why is it important to get the Big Cities Health Coalition together on the vaccine issue at this moment?
Because somebody had to say something really direct. It is very concerning that our national public health institution has federal employees challenging what we know has been true for decades, that vaccinations have eliminated some diseases that we don't even see anymore and has really addressed devastating illnesses and challenges that people throughout history have experienced. And it was important for people who are responsible for 50 million Americans to speak out loud and clear, to kind of sift through the political noise and make sure people understand that vaccines are critical for healthy kids, for healthy communities. They keep our workforce running. They really give us the best shot at addressing highly infectious diseases.
What would be the potential impact without this kind of guidance? I guess without, if folks were to follow federal advice, or if that was, you know, embraced writ large, especially thinking about across big cities?
Well, I think we've seen it start to happen this summer, is that you get measles outbreaks. You might have polio that we haven't seen for decades. And these are diseases that in the acute worst situation are deadly and have lasting impacts even for individuals who survive. So, I mean, this is about health and longevity. Vaccines has been one of the top 10 things that has extended life in this country. And so to create information that is misleading really sets us back to where we were before these diseases had vaccinations. And that's what we're trying to make sure doesn't happen. I think these other decisions that are being made out of the federal level that are kind of complicated for folks maybe to understand, but when this guidance comes out, it does indicate what health insurance companies or what Medicaid or Medicare can cover or not cover. So the response to just saying choices out there is one thing. Certainly choice is important, but to make it impossible or so cost prohibitive to actually do what is right and what people want to do is also part of the challenge. And that's the influence that this guidance can have on really making it hard to get vaccines that are otherwise very readily available.
What message would you have for folks who are maybe unsure about which vaccine guidance they should trust, especially going into, like you're saying, respiratory illness season?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, certainly here in Multnomah County, as our citizens health authority, we are providing information that is accurate. It is based off of the American Pediatrician Society. It is following guidance with the Western Health Alliance when you're looking at those pieces of information. And your doctor, your local doctor, your pediatrician, they're great resources. These are folks that people trust and can have really important conversations with. But there is accurate information out there. Our website is certainly one of them. And then looking to guidance to the Western Health Alliance, American Academy of Pediatrics, those are great resources. We are at multco.us.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up here? Any aspects of this we didn't get to touch on?
I might offer, just as an explanation, it's another way to think about vaccines. They act like shields. So they can protect us as an individual. But when we add individuals into that, we start to build up this fence that really protects our neighborhoods and our communities, that keeps illness from spreading. So not only is this an important thing to do for your individual health, this is also what community health and community protection looks like. And so taking this act is also an act of civil duty and what it looks like to protect each other and to protect those who really truly are unable to get vaccinated due to clinical reasons. And so this is how we show up for each other. And with respiratory season right around the corner, now's the time.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Multnomah County Public Health Director Kirsten Aird speaking with me about a letter that she's signed on to alongside the Big Cities Health Coalition about vaccines. More information is online at multco.us. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
I sat down with Melissa Melko and Paula Smith of Resilience Design. They're also instructors at the Portland Underground Graduate School and will offer a class called Tree Allyship coming up on Saturday, November 1st. Here's our conversation recorded on Monday, October 27th. Melissa Melko and Paula Smith, would you please introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm a landscape designer and land stewardship planner, and I teach ecology and plant ID courses at different places around town. And I've been living in Portland for 20 years and really interested in not just the ecology and all the beauty and nature in the Northwest, but also like what our relationship with it is. And as a landscape designer, I'm like kind of in it every day with folks who are trying to like find their way of like being engaged with nature.
Hi, I'm Paula Smith. I work as an arborist and also as a landscaper and do plant sourcing and design support for Resilience Design. I am from the East Coast and have been in Portland for about 12 years now, and have fallen in love with the ecologies here and learning more and more about the things that I thought I knew about. I'm just really excited to keep learning about trees.
Okay, Melissa and Paola. How did you learn about pugs, and how long have you been a pugs instructor?
Well, I've been involved with pugs since around 2016, or back around when pugs began. One of my friends, Peter Michael Bauer from Rewild Portland, started teaching for pugs, and I met the founder, Douglas Soy, through him, and got recruited to teach a course, and ended up teaching over a dozen courses on mostly botany. I had a series called Decoding Plants that was about learning the native and ornamental plants and conifers. And I've also taught a bunch of botanical illustration classes through pugs. And one of those classes was called Drying Plants.
This is Paula. This is my first time teaching a pugs class, but I took my first pugs class in 2017, and it was actually drawing plants, which was Melissa's class, and that was how I met Melissa. This is where we're at today. We are in this business together, Resilience Design, and we are also life partners, so pugs had a really big impact on my life.
Yeah. In my conversations with Douglas Soy last month, he told me that in order to teach a class, you've got to take a class. How did that work for you guys?
Back when I started, I took Rewilding 101, which is awesome, like perspectives shifting course on like human human history and where we're at today in our culture of consumerism and colonialism. It was really interesting and like so packed with resources that I'm like, you know, still thinking about today, 10 years later. And then I also took a teaching course from Douglas that was called How to Teach. It was a really good introduction to teaching with pugs and kind of how to weave the community building with the theme of lifelong learning.
For me, like I said, I took the class with Melissa in 2017, and here I am now teaching a class. So
what course are you going to be instructing, and why is that work important?
The class we're teaching on Saturday, November 1st, is called Tree Allyship, Cultivating a Reciprocal Relationship with Trees. And maybe, Paula, I'll let you talk a little bit about the why.
We want to talk about trees and being an ally and also an advocate for trees, because trees are under threat, and we are living in a time of climate change and climate crisis, and trees are really at the front lines of that, and they are also one of our main major strategies for mitigating the impacts of climate crisis. And so right now we live in a world and a government that is really putting trees under increased threat, whether that's through industrial agriculture, logging or other extractive practices, or development. And so we really want to talk to people about ways that you can be involved in that element of tree protection and advocacy. But also, we work as landscape designers and arborists, and every day we go into people's yards and we see really avoidable mistakes that they've made in managing their trees, and mistakes that sometimes are actually costing the tree its life. And we're hearing so much about planting trees, and planting trees is amazing, but also we're not planting trees 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago. We're planting trees now, and the conditions aren't the same. We don't have the same guarantees for establishment that we did then. And so I really want to talk to people about how they can better tend their trees, be better stewards, and be voices for trees moving forward. And we can shift our perspective on how we engage with trees in the city, so that we can shift our culture and take a different, reevaluate our relationship to risk with trees around us in a city, and reinvest in the green infrastructure that we have here that make a city possible.
So who takes your class? Tell me about your students.
We have a pretty broad range of students. Like most PUG students are people who just want to keep learning. And some of them are people who don't want to enroll in a degree program. And PUGs is cool because it's affordable. It has tiered pricing. And it's all like in bite-sized pieces. So all of the classes are... they're typically a month long. This is a one-day course, but a lot of them are like 4 evenings. So it's like a kind of a reasonable commitment for a lot of people. And our students, some of them are practitioners, like landscape designers or gardeners, are architects, and some folks are from like really all different walks of life. I saw one of my former students at a coffee shop this morning where they work, and really like a super wide range. But I think one of the common threads is the people who are really curious, and they really like care about the ecology and the environment, and they want to learn more about like where we live right now. And they're like engaged, like what can we do to like help the earth and like help our community too. So it's definitely a common thread.
So, Melissa and Paula, what do you get out of teaching at PUGs?
Really so many things. Obviously we've really met a lot of people. Like the community building aspect of PUGs is really important. And, over the years I've made so many good friends and met important people in my life. So that's a really big part of it. And oftentimes the people I meet are in the community doing really cool things that I maybe wouldn't know about otherwise. So it's a point of connection that's really nourishing and important. And that's a big part of it. And then I think anytime you can like set aside time to have these important conversations and like pay attention to the nuance and the depth of them, I think so much of our, you know, media and our lives is like very fast paced and very surface. And PUGS is an opportunity to like deepen in on the connection and attention and like have some of these conversations with more nuance and layers and depth than we usually get a chance to.
So what I'm hearing you say is that the connections that you make with other people at the PUGS classes is equally as important as the learning itself. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's the idea, that it's like half learning and half community building. And I think when we offer classes around these themes, we get people who are like maybe at least somewhat like-minded or have, you know, some thread in common, and then maybe a lot of other differences, but we can come together around these themes that we care about, and then connections happen.
What do your students say about your classes?
Over the years, I've had students say that it helped them feel more connected to nature and feel more engaged, especially in like active ways, of ways that they can like participate, like in maybe community projects or get involved with nonprofits, or orgs that are doing good work in the city, but also just like in their day-to-day life, like what they notice. Like, you know, if you walk past trees every day on your way to work, for instance, but you have more points of reference, like maybe you know the name or a little bit about their ecology, or you know what birds and animals use them, or what is medicinal or edible. Or here in the Northwest, since the place that we're teaching is on the traditional lands of Shnookin people, Malala, Kayapuya, and kind of intersection of like a number of people who you know, for long thousands of years have stewarded this area, like looking at the ecology and nature and knowing more about those layers can help us have like more perspective about what's going on here and what we might be, you know, asked to do in the future to be good stewards here, regardless of, you know, our own ancestry and where we're from. But having context, people have said, has really shifted how they live here. And then I've also had students who have decided to do career changes or have taken on like new interests based on the courses.
Is there a question that I haven't asked that is important to the conversation?
Paula, do you wanna say anything about like the like activism piece? How we're gonna like offer some tools for how people can like participate in comment periods for?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of folded into the question earlier of like, why are we teaching this class? And I think one of the reasons that we're teaching this class is because, despite like overall accepted idea that people love trees, the reality is that we are seeing a lot of propaganda around not loving trees and a lot of advocacy against trees all of the time. And recently, there was an article that had been published in Willamette Weekly called that was subtitled "The Taking Tree." That article went on to change the structure of urban forestry, and it removed urban forestry from Parks and Rec, and it put it under development. It also slashed the permitting team under urban forestry, and Yeah, we don't know what the impacts of that are going to be, but it feels a little bit like a not tree advocacy situation, and there need to be more people aware of how things are shifting in our own green city, Portland, our own excellent canopied city, and how things aren't what they appear. And I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about like tools that we can use to continue to make sure that we're advocating for our city and for trees and for people.
part of being a good advocate is having understanding. And I think we see trees a lot in kind of an abstract way. Trees are an icon. And when we talk about like loving trees, it can be in a really abstract way. And like having more understanding of trees and tree life cycles and ecology can make it easier for people to understand like all of these policy changes and like kind of wade through some of the myths and propaganda that's out there around trees to like have a clearer perspective.
Melissa Mulko and Paola Smith, thank you for taking the time today.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you.
That was Melissa Melko and Paola Smith of Resilience Design. They're teaching a course through Portland Underground Graduate School called Tree Allyship. That's on Saturday, November 1st. For more information on how to attend the course, you can find the details at PUGSPDX. That's PUGSPDX.com. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Dave Johnson.
KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If you